year, Matt, and the big shebang, big enchilada.
Gone by fast, man.
Our final episode of 2022 and our year-ending Christmas episode. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
And Happy New Year, because we will not see you again until after the new year.
That's correct.
And yes, that's a little prelude. We're gonna take a break and take New Year's week off and come back with a new episode weekend of January 6th. But you know, we've been going strong, and I think we did about 49, 50 episodes this year. I think we only took a couple weeks off out of 52 weeks. So mm-hmm. we did pretty good. Including our episode at Compalooza, which we did not record. Well, that was kind of my fault, but you know, so we had a busy year, man. And here we are at the end. We are recording a little bit early this week as, just before Christmas and, in preparation for a freeze here in Houston. In case we were to not have power, we didn't want to record late in the week. And we're not made for that in Texas, man. I mean,
we're not, man.
Cool weather, but not 18 degrees.
Yeah. And it's supposed to feel like, -2 is what I was thinking. So that's just nuts.
Whether they're your nuts freeze, man. You know,
For real, man.
How much underwear you put on, man? Your balls are just like frozen still.
Frozen, man.
You know, your ass cheeks freeze together, and you just clench and you go, man.
Like, clench and go.
It's like your eyebrows don't move and your eyelids stay open, and good Lord.
Yeah, I know.
I'm like not looking. Like,
what is this, Colorado?
No shit, man. Like, if I wanted to live somewhere where it was gonna be cold like that, I'd fucking live somewhere it was gonna be cold like that.
You know? Yeah.
I don't. I mean, I guess I appreciate people that live like in Canada and Montana and up north and stuff, man, because you know, up there they get up and they have to go to work, and it doesn't matter if they're snowed in. You gotta get up 30 minutes earlier and shovel your car.
Yeah.
Because it's expected up there, you know. Mm. And we are down here whining about a little bit of cold. We're like, yeah, but people don't understand. But you know, on the flip side of that, people come down here and they can't handle the heat. But you know what? We really don't like the heat either. I mean, trust me, no matter how long you live here, you don't get used to 100-degree weather.
Yeah.
It sucks.
It's, I mean, we stay indoors on you every time.
Yeah, we stay indoors a lot in the summertime because it's just too fucking hot. And yeah, and that's just the way it is.
That's the best way to describe it.
But this is the Rebel Radio Podcast, and this is Mark.
This is Matt.
And, you know, before we get too far into starting the show, just a quick thank you for making 2022 another awesome year on the show and listening. And if you love what we do, man, we always appreciate if you can go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. That helps us out. And we're on Spotify, iHeartRadio, you know, all the apps that you can listen to podcasts, we're there. And subscribe, hit that subscribe button, subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. And my one goal on the show is I'm going to do better with the Twitter in 2023, because I know I slacked on it. I'm going to try to really post a lot more, because I know we have a lot of followers on there, and do better with the social media on the show. And we have a Facebook group too, not just a Facebook page, and the group, we're definitely more active on the group than we are on the page. So follow us there. So we had to do our little spiel for people listening to our big year ending show, and we're gonna have some fun today, man. We're going to talk our favorite movies of the year, our, what we're looking forward to in 2023, some of our Rebel Radio moments. Before we get to all that, download this, man, where we tell people what we watched, streamed, or played this week. And kind of a short week, so I don't think either one of us had a lot of time to watch a lot of things. I'll go because it'll be quick, man. I a couple Christmas movies, honestly. We watched with the kids the other day. I watched the Polar Express with them, and then we watched Christmas Vacation. Today we had Elf on in the house. We're kind of watching that. I haven't gotten to Jingle All the Way yet, so don't be disappointed, Matt. But I will before the week's over.
There we go.
And
saving the best for last.
Yeah, I just kind of went on a Christmas movie spree here, and I did start the first episode of 1923, the Yellowstone prequel with Harrison Ford, and I'm about 40 minutes into it. So far, so good. You know, Taylor Sheridan is creating quite the little universe with his Yellowstone stuff, and it's pretty good, man. The amazing thing about that guy is the quality, just it stays. You keep thinking, here's a guy who's writing all these shows, and where is he going to slack at some point? And so far he hasn't. And it's just, it's really, really awesome to see.
The reviews have been really, really good all the time, consistently.
And it's just good stuff, man. The guy is really turning out quality television. And then other than that, I that's about all I watched, just some Christmas movies. Like I said, we've only had a few days since our last show. And when we get back, though, I'm definitely going to go see Avatar next week when I'm off work. And I'll have my review when we come back in the new year. And I'm sure I'll watch some stuff between now and then. Like Knives Out hits Netflix this Friday. Definitely going to watch that within the next week. Sequel. So I'll have a couple movies definitely be watching here in the next couple weeks.
All right, man. Well, I'm in your boat. I did not watch much or download much, but I did see that on HBO Max, we did get Black Adam a little early.
Oh, yeah. Me and the kids did rewatch that too.
Yep. Did a rewatch. Little goofy, still. The Rock tried to make it like a Rock movie, not a Black Adam movie. It was very much a Rock movie. I was still entertained by it. I liked watching the Justice Society the most. That's probably the coolest part of the movie. Just seeing Warhawk and Dr. Fate and Atom Smasher, just going at it and fighting a A-level threat. That's always cool whenever you see, team ups and, against one strong opponent. I think that's the coolest type of battle to watch in a superhero movie. And then there were some games on Game Pass that my oldest son, Jake, had been looking at, and he wanted me to play one, and it's called Sea of Solitude. And it started off as a Steam game. It's interesting. It's very much foreign, type of animation, and you're this character that's traveling around in her own mind, and you're facing your own demons who are in the form of like sea monster apparitions, and you're basically trying to free your mind from depression, because this person's depressed because they're their brother died or their brother committed suicide. So it's a weird game. But my son's a little bit more mature than most. So he finds that interesting. Whereas, normally a kid his age probably just want to play a fighting game or a shooting game. So I was like, okay, I'll play it. Cause I'd rather play a fighting game or a shooting game myself. that's a little too existential, for my taste. At least for a video game. But it was okay. I mean, you can't do much in it. You're exploring. You shoot these flares and they tell you where to go. And, it's really just almost like a story walkthrough, what you're doing, like a digital storybook, more than a game. But it's free on Game Pass. If you want something interesting to play and something different, you can definitely check that out. But other than that, I did watch Batman Begins, cause I was like, I'm going to try and watch the rest of these films and try and watch all three. I didn't get to, I watched Batman Begins and then this movie that we're going to talk about today. That's about it, man. I was pretty light. Diet download this week.
I was rewatching Black Adam with the kids today. I agree. It's some cheesy in part, but it held up pretty well after even just seeing it a month or two ago in theaters. I don't know. Still irritates me. There's a little Rock news later in the news, but it still irritates me to no end what's kind of going on over at DC.
Yeah. Or what's not going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Either way you want to look at it.
But, just disappointing, man. Oh, well. It is what it is, as they say, I suppose. All right. Well, let's get into it, man. We started a few years ago, the podcast, I started realizing turning 8 or 9 next year in May. I can't remember how to look. So we started a few years ago, doing a Batman movie at Christmas. I, you know, we when we rebooted the show with episode 81, we did Batman 89, mm-hmm. and that was our first episode to reboot the show. And we've sprinkled some Batman films throughout, you know, on normal episodes. But at Christmas time, we've done Batman films. We did Batman Begins last year. Was it last year? Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Or maybe 2 years ago. I can't remember. And I know we did Batman 66. Maybe that was last year's. And then we did a couple of the animated Batman films. So we were like, you know, we toyed with Batman Forever because we haven't done it yet. And we will get to it. That might be next Christmas. Who knows? But we decided let's go ahead and finish Nolan's trilogy, especially being that was the 10th anniversary of this movie this past summer. And that is The Dark Knight Rises. And to summarize this movie, it takes place 8 years after The Dark Knight. And Gotham has been fairly peaceful. The Batman has kind of gone into hiding at this point. And after the chaos of the Joker and the destruction of Harvey Dent, him being blamed for Harvey Dent's death. And but things, as always happen in these comic book worlds, don't stay quiet for long as a new villain emerges named Bane, who decides to come into Gotham and start wreaking havoc. And he flushes the Batman out essentially through his master plan of taking over Gotham City and trying to finish what Ra's al Ghul started. And that's by sacking Gotham, as we find out that Bane was a member of the League of Assassins at one point. And he does flush Batman out, and he breaks him basically and sends Batman to this, what would you call that where Bane came from? It's almost
hell
like
on earth.
It's a prison, like a hell on earth. In his deep, where he has to recover with these major back injuries and escape and make his way back to Gotham and stop Bane and his criminal organization. I mean, that's basically what The Dark Knight Rises in a nutshell. But it's definitely a deeper film than that, with a lot more meanings that we'll talk about.
Absolutely.
In a bit.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
let's start by, first off, this was a film that Nolan wasn't sure where to go with it first. He openly talks about this in interviews. You know, we lost Heath Ledger shortly before The Dark Knight was released in theaters. And Nolan's plan was, we all know, was to bring the Joker back. And it wasn't meant to be. And Nolan tied with the idea of using some CGI footage and having the Joker at least appear in the film. But they all decided it was disrespectful to Heath, and they moved on from it. So Nolan rewrote the script with his brother and his writing team, and they came up with the idea of essentially making a sequel to Batman Begins, because that's what this is, even though it has ties to The Dark Knight through Harvey Dent.
Yeah.
And not an easy task to do after losing such a bright star as Heath Ledger and kind of messing with your plans that you may have had. And Nolan has never said what those were. He just has openly said that the plan was to bring Joker back, and we don't know if the plot would have been similar, but he decided to go with Bane because he felt that after the Scarecrow was more about fear and the Joker was chaos, he wanted a villain that could go toe-to-toe, muscle-to-muscle with Batman. And what a better villain than Bane to do that. And he cast Tom Hardy in the role of Bane, and Tom Hardy, he accepted the role without even reading the script, because he's a longtime Batman fan, and he was like, I'm doing this, or you're not telling me no.
Yeah.
And he was ready to go, and he gained muscle for it, and he wore heels to make himself taller, and he's freaking intimidating, and he's badass in the fucking movie, and he's a great villain. So Nolan gives us this sequel that was a tough sell even on the audiences, but how do you sell a tough movie after losing a star like Heath Ledger? You make a good fucking movie. And I think sometimes The Dark Knight Rises gets a little unfair scrutiny, because it's really good, but people always want to compare it to The Dark Knight.
It's Batman versus Batman.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you follow up Batman with Batman? It's hard. Right. And it sounds silly, but it's so true.
And people,
yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, but you know, I want to take away from what you were going to say, but you know, I'll just prelude you know, that this movie, you know, makes up for the lack of Heath Ledger with the notations of these deep meanings and nods to the title of the movie, Rising. Mm-hmm. And there's other things too. There's other struggles, which, you know, I think you were about to about to get into. I don't want to take away from you. It looked like you were ready to fire off.
You were good. And I was just saying that, you know, I sometimes wonder about the scrutiny of this film because I'm like, it's a really, really good Batman film. In fact, I've gotten to the point with the Nolan trilogy that I can't always decide which one I like the most. There's something I really like about all three of them, you know? And you tend to lean towards The Dark Knight because of the Joker and just a lot of incredible sequences, but man, there's a lot that's really good in Batman Begins. There's a lot that's really good in this one. Like this has an incredible opening sequence too, which there is the theory is like, why does Bane go through all that at the beginning of the movie? Because he doesn't really need to kill anyone on the plane. All he needs to do is capture the scientist. Yes. And it does seem like an awfully elaborate plan to plant bodies. But that's what films are. They should be elaborate and badass and really cool. You know, I mean, it's kind of boring just to see him pull up a vehicle and throw the scientists into it. You know,
it's classic Nolan. It's a set piece.
Yeah.
A set piece and twists are what one of the two things that he does best.
Mm. Yeah, no, I agree. And it just sets up the ferocity of Bane and everything at the beginning of the film that this guy is someone to reckon with and he's a badass. And it's great. And then we find out that Bruce has become a recluse shortly after this. No one sees him or hears from him. The Batman has not been seen.
There's rumors that he has long hair and long nails. He hasn't clipped them, you know, or whatever. He's scarred or something.
Yeah. And throughout all this, Commissioner Gordon has covered up the fact that it wasn't Batman's fault, you know, that Harvey Dent died, and it was somewhat indirectly Jim's fault, you know, and Jim has to live with this and he struggles with it as he tries to do his job in the police force and mentor young detectives like Blake, who's played by Jason Gordon-Levitt. Yeah. I always forget his name. Good actor, man. I've always liked him and stuff.
Oh yeah.
And Gordon-Levitt is in this role as Blake and as Bane comes back into the city, you know, he introduces himself. We know there's crimes being committed underground and all that. And he breaks into the stock exchange but no one can find where he is. And it turns out he's got this entire underground system going, you know, of criminal activity throughout the city. And he has the police and everyone on edge and they're hoping that Batman comes back. And then when he finally, I'm trying to remember, does he draw Batman out before the stadium scene?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And like you said, it's all about rises. Batman has to rise back up from being reclusive. And of course, when Bruce gets broken, he has to rise out of the thing.
He had to get out of the well.
Yeah.
Think about that. He fell into a well, a pit. He had to be tied to a rope and he had to be pulled out. This time he's not getting pulled out. He's tied to a rope. And he has to get out himself. And it's not until he learns, and I'll get into one of the deep meanings here. You know, sorry if I'm jumping the gun on something with, you know, that you were going to touch on, but you know, he's obviously broken in many ways. So you learn that, that Bruce is broken. And he welcomes death at this point. He has no incentive to really live. He feels that he lost Maggie Gyllenhaal's character,
Rachel,
and
he's kind of shunned Alfred away at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. And he doesn't even really care about Alfred, it seems like, anymore. And you know, he feels like he has nothing left to lose. So he doesn't value life anymore. And it's not until, he realizes that, you know, he has to find something to live for in order to rise out of that pit and pull himself off without any rope, to where he's able to get out of there. And he says, I can't watch. I'd rather die with my city. He can't stand by while his city's destroyed. And that's what powers him to, you know, he says he fears dying in here while his city burns. Mm-hmm. And so when he learns fear, then he can rise, and beat Bane. And so I like that theme because there are superhero movies There's a difference between Ant-Man 2 and Superman and Spider-Man 2. There's a difference between, you know, Batman and Robin and Batman The Dark Knight Rises. And it's stuff like this, these deeper themes that make the film strive to be more than just a superhero movie, because it's not what you are underneath. It's what you do that defines you, baby. How about that?
There you go. And then, and throughout all this is going on, we're introduced to Selina Kyle, Catwoman, who that might be my one beef with this film is, and nothing against Anne Hathaway. She's fine in the role.
Yeah.
But she's kind of an afterthought in this movie.
She ain't centerfold.
She's not really needed, honestly. I mean, she does a few things to help the plot, but otherwise she's just kind of there. And I always felt like, why is Catwoman in this? She doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Not very much anyway. of course, meanwhile, this, while Bruce is being recluse, his board is being taken over by Wayne Enterprises, and he has to come back and try to get part of his company back. And luckily, Lucius put several stocks into his name so he could buy the company back, essentially.
Yeah.
and meanwhile, Bane's plan is he steals his scientists because he knows that Wayne Enterprises is working on nuclear fusion, and they have it hidden in a well, and he knows the scientists can turn it into essentially a nuclear bomb is what it is. And he wants to, if Gotham doesn't bow to Bane's needs, he's just going to destroy it. And that's ends up what he ends up trying to do at the end of the film is he's like, you know what, screw it, I'm destroying it, you know?
And what a cool technique by Nolan to use the imagery of time, and just that clock keeps ticking and ticking and ticking, and it just builds suspense throughout that entire scene where the bomb is just going through the city.
Yeah.
So I think that's that was a really, really smart element by Nolan to put that in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, a lot of people also argue that this Batman film doesn't have enough Batman in it, but I kind of like the fact that you go through this whole thing where Bruce, like you said, he's broken and he has to bring himself back. And when he appears back on screen, you know, it's really a great sequence in the film where the police are all chasing him and he's chasing Bane's men.
Uh-huh.
It's awesome, you know, and it's worth, like you said, that suspense, it's worth that buildup till Batman comes back, even if it's at almost an hour into the film. Mm-hmm. I think it's almost an hour and a half into the film, if I remember correctly. It's quite a while before he comes back as Batman. And because this is the longest of Nolan's films, it's 2 hours and 44 minutes.
Yes, sir.
So I like that. The more I watch this, I like the fact that Batman isn't the main focus for parts of the movie, but it's important to tell that story about, again, the theme of rising. You know, Batman comes back and he gets broken and he has to come back again, basically. You know, he has almost come back twice in this movie.
Come back
and,
again.
And how cool is that?
And face himself, essentially. So, and I say that because the Joker and Batman were polar opposites. In this movie, Bane and Batman are both the same. They're willing to die for their causes. They're willing to go to link's end to defend what they believe in. And Ra's al Ghul, you know, trained both of them. Mm-hmm. They're both from the, League of Assassins, League of Shadows, however you want to word it. But I feel like they're very similar to each other, more so than the Joker is. He's a lot like the Joker in other ways where money doesn't bother him. You know, Daggett, he's just he didn't care about the money. He just cares about his plan. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter who we are, you know?
Yeah, I always forget the great Ben Mendelsohn's in this as Daggett, you know, I mean.
Yeah.
Mendelsohn's one of those guys that I really like him on screen. He's a good actor.
He's good in all the roles that he plays.
Yeah, he plays that seedy guy really well, you know. He's good at it, man. And what I also like, too, is this has one of my favorite bad guy versus superhero moments because – it's the fight in the underground cave where Bane breaks Batman because the way Nolan shoots it, it's dark. It's not real super lit because he wants you to feel darkness and pain. There's not a lot of music going, so you feel the punches. It's a really great sequence and as an audience member, you're crushed, man, because you're like, God, your hero's getting the living shit beat out of him, and it's frightening.
You fight like a young man, admirable but mistaken,
and you feel the brutality of Bane. And of course, it's heavily inspired by the Nightfall comics, where Bane breaks Batman's back.
Yeah.
But it's awesome, and it's awesome too because as an audience member, it sucks to see it happen. But you know, Batman's coming back. I mean, it's a fucking Batman movie. It's like,
yeah,
you know, he's not going to die. It's just like, you know, it's the whole James Bond syndrome. Bond is, I shouldn't say never going to die because we know what happened last movie, but yeah, you know, most of the time he always comes out of it, you know,
never say never again, baby.
Right.
There you go.
And,
you only live twice.
And then shortly after that, we see Bane unleashes master plan as he comes in the football stadium, and what a sequence that is with the bombs going off and the football players running down the field. Hines Ward,
yeah,
football player played the running back, and they shot it with the stadium blowing up behind him, and it is all shot at Hines Field in Pittsburgh, and they made it look like Gotham Knights Field, and just a frighteningly incredible sequence of events as Bane basically takes over the city, destroys all the bridges, lets no one in or out. And he convinces the police that there's something going on underground. He traps them all down there, except for, of course,
mixes Blake. Explosives with the concrete.
And you're thinking at this point, how's anyone going to get out of this? And of course we need Bruce to come back and make his way back to the city. And
what's cool about this, and I'll interrupt you for really quick, and this is another cool thing, and you know, one of the reasons why there's not a whole lot of Batman is because you have like five different stories going on. You've got Blake, you've got Catwoman, you've got Daggett, you've got Bane, you've got Batman, you've got Jim Gordon,
Fox's story. Yeah.
And all these different things are going on. The stuff with the construction worker, Blake comes upon them, Gordon and the police, they're going down, you know, into the sewers. And then Batman, he's trying to, you know, friggin' hold himself together because he done, you know, popped his back out.
And we forget that
it converges Bane, right there.
Yeah. And we forget that Bane beats up Gordon. So Gordon's in the hospital trying to run his police force. No, you're right. And I shouldn't say Catwoman doesn't do anything because she does kind of betray Batman. You know, Bane convinces her to get him to come down there.
It sounds good what he's saying because, you know, she's talking about how, you know, after all this is said and done, you guys will wonder how you took so much and left us so little. And, she steals from the rich, but then she realizes that Bane he's too radical. She doesn't agree with him. She wants out. And you know, that's when she gets locked up.
Yeah.
And then she has to, you know, come to a realization too. Not as much as some of the other characters have to come to a realization, but you know, she has something, you know, there too. She could run, but she stays and she helps because it's the right thing to do. And it just further, you know, shows you that, you know, she's really trying to be a good person now. She really wants that clean slate.
Mm-hmm. And then there is a twist. You know, you talk about Nolan his twist, and this is the one out of all three Batman movies. This is the one where he kind of puts a twist in there, where Marion Cotillard's character, who we think is a member of the Wayne board, turns out that she's Talia al Ghul and Ra's daughter, and she has She is really the one who masterminded this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And we find out she got Bane into Gotham, and she finds out that she was part of the League of Assassins too, because she's Ra's father. And it turns out that she's really behind all this. And she betrays Batman as well towards the end of the film. And Batman, to the point where almost considers breaking his no kill rule, but then Catwoman does it for him.
Yeah.
Basically by taking her out. And then, and then Batman kind of the same thing to Bane when he pulls off Bane's mask and whatever the breathing apparatus he has is that could kill him. Batman's like, well, I don't have to save you either, you know, essentially.
Yeah.
So that is the kind of twist that Nolan puts in this movie. And, Hardy, one thing I like about Hardy in this role is, he was into it. You know, he beat himself up. He said he watched videos of like how dictators would talk, and that's where he got like the holding his chest thing, and mm-hmm. you know, they would beef their arms up and their chest out, and mercenaries, and it's a tough role to follow in following up Heath and how good he was. And I think that Tom is such a good actor that he realized he didn't have to try to be better than Heath. He just made Bane his own thing. And like you said, it's complete opposite of what the Joker villain was. Cause Hardy could have easily came in there and played Bane kind of a bit more crazy and chaotic like Joker. But I think going the military route was a smart thing to do because it differentiates the villain so well. And from what I was reading, that Nolan basically gave Hardy, you know, full, you know, carte blanche. Hey, do what you want to do with this character, man. And so Hardy kind of created his own vision of Bane from the accent to the way he walked and acted and made it his own. And he's freaking badass.
You believe
this guy. Like, you never believed the Joker could beat Batman in a fist fight, but you believe that Bane could fucking kick his ass.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. The Joker, he would just try and, manipulate, the scenario to put him in the win. Bane, you know, he's gonna throw some hands, baby. Throw some time. Hands. Oh yeah. And man, you know, Hardy being fresh off of Warrior, I believe he filmed Warrior before this, right?
He may have, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he was already big from that, and he got even bigger for this role. And I like how he did the character. Nolan's universe is more of a realistic take on a comic book, the comic book story of Batman. And really this film, it doesn't even feel like a superhero film to me. It feels like a post-apocalyptic war movie with everything that's going on, especially with the battle at the end, and of course the terrorism that goes on in the stock exchange. It's almost like a, half a post-apocalyptic, half Mission Impossible film. But it's fun to watch, and it's a superhero film that strives to set itself apart from the rest, much like Spider-Man 2. This is something that I put is kind of like along par with Spider-Man 2, and really sets itself above the rest and in its own category with the themes that it has going on. I didn't catch that on the first go around, but after you've watched it for three or four times, you start realizing Bruce's struggle and you don't look for all the stuff that you would normally look for, like what we got in Batman Begins, just Batman. All that comes with that. Now we have a more of a mental, men's journey, struggle to become what he used to be in his call to duty with the army that is imminent to siege on Gotham. I feel like this film, like you said, doesn't get enough credit. Obviously it was, aside from being super successful, it's so much more than that.
Made a lot of money.
Yeah, budget of $250,000, grossed worldwide over $1 million, $160 million on its opening weekend.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in the first, couple of weeks, it made its money back. I mean,
it was very successful. And I want to go back a little bit where you said, like, you're right. Batman Begins is like a supernatural superhero film. The Dark Knight is like the crime saga. And this is like the war movie.
Yes,
I agree with that. And, it's cool that Nolan had those different themes throughout all three of them. All three films are tied together very nicely, and they have their ties to each other. And I think that's well done. I always wondered, I'm always going to wonder, I think we all will, what it would have been like if he had been back for part three, but we still got a really great film. We haven't even talked about the ending. I do like, Batman has this really badass Batwing in this version. Mm-hmm. Maybe not as iconic as Keaton's Batwing, but it's still really cool. It's more military-like, and he uses it essentially to get the bomb off of Gotham out into the ocean. And, he drops a bomb, and it makes it look like Batman sacrifices himself. And there's a there's a theme back earlier in the film where Alfred tells Bruce, like, this is what I always wish for you, that one day I see you and I know you're happy and we just nod at each other and that's it.
Yep.
And so as the film ends, you know, Lucius discovers that the autopilot was fixed on the Batwing, which he thought wasn't working. Mm-hmm. So we get this really nice ending where we see Alfred is at this cafe or whatever it is in another country. And he looks over and sees Bruce, and he sees Bruce is with Selina and he's happy and they nod at each other. And people try to say it was an ambiguous ending, that it was left up to what you think, but Nolan's pretty much confirmed that no, Bruce was alive, you know,
yeah.
It was real. It wasn't a dream sequence. And then we see Blake, who was given the coordinates to the Batcave through Batman, and he discovers the cave, and we find out that his surname is Robin. Was it a surname or his real name? Yeah, his real name is
Robin.
So it's kind of a little nod to the comics that this guy could have been Robin. And I really liked the ending of the movie, but it also made me go, man, I want a fourth one now, you know, to see Blake take over the mantle of Batman and Robin and see Bruce come back. Uh-huh. I always thought it'd been really cool for him to take over the mantle of Batman, and then something really bad happens and Bruce shows up like, hey, I got another costume for you. You know, it's always like that what if could have been, you know, if they had done the fourth film. Because it's a really good ending. I know people said they didn't like the ending, but I actually really like it.
And then Gordon, him thanking Gordon mm-hmm. for, you know, comforting him when he was a child.
And revealing that he was Bruce, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's like, the people deserve to know who you are.
Yep. And we don't credit Gary Oldman enough either. I mean, he's really good as Gary Oldman. He's probably the best Alfred we've had so far. Even though I enjoy Jeffrey Wright's take in the Batman, and we'll see where he goes with the future films. But I really like Gordon's, version of Oldman, or Oldman's version of Gordon in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do like what he did with the role over the three films. And we kind of got to see him grow along with Batman throughout the three films, which was really well done.
Yep. Then we got something equal to, I never said thank you. And you'll never have to.
That's right. But, man, The Dark Knight Rises, man, I really enjoy Nolan's trilogy a lot. This is an easy A-plus for me. I give the whole trilogy A-plus. I mean, I don't think, as I said, Dark Knight is a seminal favorite. But over the years, man, I've liked all three of these films almost equally. I can put any of them in my player and enjoy watching any of Nolan's Batman films on equal levels. So easily A-plus.
There aren't many superhero movies, superhero trilogies that could compare to this movie.
Right.
I think the only thing that you could maybe say is like it is the Captain America trilogy.
They're not connected totally. Yeah.
No,
it's a different type of trilogy.
Different type of trilogy. And it's more of a superhero movie.
Hmm.
You know,
yeah.
it doesn't have that extra element to me, you know, that we talked about, you know, in this movie.
And how crazy is it going to be if Reeves ends up doing a trilogy, which is how it's looking, and we end up with two rival Batman trilogies that are both just as good? Because that could happen in the next few years, you know? That's crazy. But The Dark Knight Rises, man, 10 years old, amazing film. We might have a little more Batman talk here in just a few once we get to our year-end talk here. We're going to do a couple of real quick news things, and then we're going to get into our year-end special stuff. Because the news is a little slow this week. It's holiday week. But it seems like Black Adam, we talked about it earlier, that Black Adam 2 is not going to be a part of James Gunn's future universe. But they're not ruling out that The Rock is completely done with Black Adam, that he could be back later. Again, man, this news, this fallout continues. I thought it was kind of interesting that Gunn released a statement about being bullied. I'm like, well, you're pissing a lot of people off, dude. Now, I'm not saying anyone should threaten him. You should never do that. You should never threaten anyone, never call names. But, like, I'm not so sure releasing a statement was going to help your cause right now, Gunn, because right now people don't understand what you're doing and they're kind of pissed. You know, because I think it just shows the dedication of the fan base, and people really want these movies to succeed. And and they're pissed about him. I think I see more people being pissed about Henry Cavill not coming back than Gal Gadot, you know.
Yeah, surprisingly.
So
I thought there'd be a little bit more backlash about that.
So we'll see how this saga continues to unfold over the next several months. The only bit of news I do is that Henry Cavill might not be playing Superman, but he's going to appear in the Warhammer 40,000, whatever it's called, for Amazon
40K.
Prime. Yep. 40K for Amazon Prime. So he's going to have him a new project to go really soon.
And he was on YouTube building Warhammer figurines. And putting them together and painting them. And I'm like, man, Frank's probably having a fucking field day over here. Oh, well, me and Henry Cavill, we do the same thing. I'm like him.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into some year ending celebration type stuff. And we're going to start this with our top five favorite movies of the year. Now, there's only two movies I haven't seen this year that I really want to see, and that's Knives Out and then Avatar. So those, you know, could have made my top five, but they didn't because I haven't seen them yet. So I'm going to, you know, go with what I did see this year. I'm going to start. I'll start with my number five, and my number five on my list is Prey. It's a movie that wasn't expecting a lot, but from a Predator prequel as it was, but I find myself really liking that movie quite a bit, and I trolled Matt a little bit, saying it was better than the original Predator.
Man,
but I liked it, man. It came out. I had zero expectations with it, and just really enjoyed it, man. I liked it a lot, and I've watched it twice, you know, since it came out, and I dig it, man. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was one of those movies that. You know, you want to see the Predator franchise succeed, and this is probably the best way to do it is to take you to another time, and you know, give a, you know, almost a legacy type of sequel. You know, so or
prequel in this case,
prequel, yeah, prequel, legacy prequel, yeah. I was very surprised with this movie you know, definitely found it fun.
Mm.
For me, number five, and talking about, you know, sequels, I had to put Dragon Ball Super Superhero as my number five. I love that Dragon Ball has made it to theaters and that we had an even more successful run than any of the other previous Dragon Ball theatrical releases with the
did
the
it end up making series. More money than Broly?
I believe so.
Okay, I knew it was close. So so I must end up finishing this run with more than Broly.
And it was, I know it was the largest theatrical release of any anime film. That's Akira, the Ghost in the Shell, what have you. Obviously, different time. The popularity is for anime is much, much more. You have My Hero Academia being released.
Yeah, I think the previous record was Spirited Away, and it broke the record for most theaters.
Yeah. It was definitely fun to see that. I know your kids loved it. My kids loved it.
I'm not as big of a fan as y'all are, but I appreciate it, and I try to keep it. And I enjoyed the movie, too. I really did walk out there liking it. And they finally announced a Blu-ray release. It's March 13th, I think. So they finally did announce an American Blu-ray release.
March 13th. I have to look for it around that time. Yeah. An Amazon Prime order.
Yep. And number four, I have Bullet Train, which I just recently watched. But man, I loved it. I loved it enough that I bought a copy of it the other day because they had it for like $10 and I was in Target and I was like, I'm buying this fucking. I know I could watch it on Netflix. That seems silly, but I still like physical media. And sometimes movies don't stay on Netflix. You know, they go off. And that was a movie that I enjoyed enough that I want to be able to watch it when I want to watch it, my player. So I bought it. And, Brad Pitt's great in it. The whole cast is great, man. You can tell they all had a ton of fun making that movie. So much cool action in it, cool sequences, good comedy. I really like Bullet Train a lot.
Yeah. For me, I had to put Prey number four. So I put just a little bit higher than you. Like I said before, I enjoyed it. It was refreshing. Mid Thunder gave a great performance. Whether you, you know, I get it. The girl, you know, beats the predator and outsmarts her, and her brother, who's obviously a great hunter in his own right, you know, doesn't, but you know, stop, you know, just stop and enjoy the film.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I've gotten at this point.
And she's great in the movie. You know, she really is.
So. She really is. And it's a great film. I like watching the conquistadors, you know, try and load their muskets.
When I watched Prey, I never really felt of it as a woman power movie. I just thought she was really good in the role and what she did. But I did see people complaining about that, but it didn't bother me at all. You know?
Yeah. And, I just take it for what it is, man.
Yeah.
Enjoy it. We're getting more Predator, you know?
Yeah. Man, my top three might be one of the toughest top threes I ever had to do. Cause any one of these movies could be number one. But at number three, I put Everything Everywhere All at Once. A movie that's just incredible. I hope it wins some Oscars. I hope it gets the recognition it deserves, because I've talked about this movie to several people and say, you've got to see this. And it's such a good movie. Talk about a movie with depth. We think The Dark Knight Rises had depth. Everything Everywhere All at Once is a deeply in-depth movie, but not so deep that you can't understand it. I mean, anyone who's ever, you know, maybe younger people may not get it as much, but people like us that are a little bit older and we've had children and we're living, you know, good lives with lots of family and stuff, we appreciate the deeper meaning behind Everything Everywhere All at Once and what it means. And Michelle Yeoh is fantastic in it. So is Kiwon Quinn, is how you say his name. I don't want to say it wrong. He's just an amazing cast. Jamie Lee Curtis is great in it. Just an absolutely incredible movie. And, it's like I said, it could be my number one. My top three is all three of them could be great.
Is that because they had dildos as fingers that squirted mustard?
I thought they were hot dog fingers, not dildos. The dildos were up the butts in the one fight. And that's the coolest thing is the movie is apeshit crazy, but it really is. It doesn't apologize for it.
And I remember watching it. I'm like, what the fuck is this, Mark?
But it doesn't apologize for it. And then it gets just crazy enough and it pulls back into reality. And that's what they did. The Daniels, the directors, did so good with it. They have some fun, but then they pull it back. It doesn't get so crazy that it's like it gets ridiculous. It's just enough crazy and just an amazing movie.
And man, I had a tough time with the top three. I knew what my number one was going to be, obviously. But the two and the three, I felt like I could have flip flopped these either way. But I've got Avatar 2. I felt like, and I know you haven't seen it, but I feel like it's just visually stunning. Cameron's always been the director that has made a visually stunning movie to where everyone else just is playing catch up. It looks great. The battles that they do have are pretty nice looking. I could deal. I'd be happy if there was a little less of the whole, you know, animal bonding type of thing in the movie. And they'd focus more on the fights and, you know, some of that stuff. But, you know, it's going to do well. Is it going to make back $2 billion? I don't know. It's just pretty damn ambitious. But I know it could definitely make at least $1 billion worldwide.
Yeah. And number two, man. And again, I this could have been number one, cause it's such an amazing movie, and that's Top Gun Maverick. I mean, this is a legacy sequel that I was looking forward to, but I just kind of thought that it would be a run-of-the-mill kind of typical action film. But, man, we should know by now to not bet against Tom Cruise. I mean, the guy, say what you want about him with his Scientology and all that business, but, man, he entertains, man. This guy knows how to make movies, and Top Gun Maverick is top-notch filmmaking. It's top-notch. A story. It's exciting. It's thrilling. It's emotional. It's all the things you go to the movies for. And he pulled this off, him and director John Kowinski, I think is how it is. No, not I don't know. I'm probably saying it wrong, but they pulled off the best of the legacy sequels so far. There's no doubt about it. Just an incredible movie with a lot of almost 90% practical effects. They shot this stuff with real jets and all that. And holy shit, man, it just blew you away walking out of the theater. It was awesome.
No, for real, man, I was ready to hop into a plane and take off. And I remember I made that video or that you saw on Facebook. That was pretty funny. Yeah. I try to make how it is driving off after watching Top Gun. You just want to play Highway to the Danger Zone while you're just flying through the streets.
You know, and played on the nostalgia in the film some, but that's okay. It was just enough.
Just enough, man. I think it did it better than even Ghostbusters Afterlife. As much as I love Ghostbusters Afterlife, I think the nostalgia was managed better on Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah.
Not by a ton, but by a noticeable amount.
Just in the first 5 minutes of the film, with the opening sequence on the aircraft carrier, then the Top Gun theme playing as Maverick rides his motorcycle to the hangar. That it's right there. It's like, damn, you're in the film within the first 5 minutes. You're like, okay, let's go for this ride.
Let's go, baby. Number two for me, it's the Batman. You know, I debated on where I was going to put this on the list. I know, you know, I've had my reservations about, you know, some of the direction the movie took. But it looks great. We've got great performances. You know, that's enough said. There's great action scenes. I like how the Riddler was depicted. It almost feels like watching the movie Seven again, watching that detective type stuff. That's kind of how I would put it on almost on par with Seven. You know, the detective stuff was really cool. That's probably what I liked most about the movie, that this was like a detective Batman type of film. And you really hadn't seen that before to that extent. You know, you got some of it in Bale's movies, you know, but this one, you know, was so much, you know, more than what those were in that regard.
Well, you fucked up by not making yours make it number one like I did. Otherwise, we'd been on par. But I made the Batman number one because, as a lifelong Batman fan, this was the Batman movie that I agree with you. I wanted to see a detective Batman. I wanted to see a living comic on screen with him narrating his story. Nolan always said he never did the Penguin or the Riddler because he felt he couldn't pull them off realistically enough. Well, Reeves proved you wrong, motherfucker, because he pulled off a realistic Riddler. Zoe is amazing as Catwoman. I've watched this film probably 8 or 9 times now. I really like it a lot. I think Zoe is the best Catwoman we've had, and I will stand by that, even over Michelle Pfeiffer. I think she's fantastic. You know, Colin Farrell, amazing as the Penguin. You know, everyone in this entire cast is so good. People that were on the fence about Robert Pattinson, that's ridiculous, man, because this guy can act. He's not just a sparkly vampire. The guy can act. He's really good. I kind of like his low-key, kind of quiet Batman. You know, I appreciate what Bale did, but I'm also – it was nice to have a break from Bale's cocaine Batman. Oh, yeah, I'm going to do this, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like – I kind of like that. I like the way Pattinson kind of played it a little more low key, but yet has his moments of rage that we see it in the film. Top Gun could have been my number one movie of the year also, but I just keep leaning towards the Batman because it's the one I keep watching the most. And I like it a lot. And I'm guessing your number one movie is Top Gun Maverick.
Yep. It was fun. I mean, it made a friggin' billion at the box office.
That's a lot of fucking money.
You know, they're just like, you know what, let's just fucking keep this thing in the movie for like 5 months. It was in the movie. Yeah. It was in theaters for like 5 months. I feel like.
Yeah.
I think just a month ago, you could still go and see it.
Re-released. Yeah. Well, and the crazy thing is, like, here's a good thing that Top Gun Maverick did for generations. My mom, you know, cause she doesn't walk as well as she used to. And so it's hard sometimes to get around, especially in a movie theater, even though they have handicap ramps. It got her out of the house to go see it. She was I want to see this on the big screen. And when I went and saw it, I took her with me, and she absolutely loved it. You know, and we took her riding cart so she could get up in the elevator and sit and watch the movie. And so that tells you something right there, that this crossed generations because people wanted to go see it from all ages, whether they're our parents' ages or younger people. And I think that's what was so great about Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically it, man. And then you have this, this tied up loose end, you know, this closure element of Goose and Maverick.
Yeah. And, which was nice.
Yeah, that was nice. So, you know, man, do we get another one? We'll see, man.
Yeah, we'll see.
I think there's money to be made with another one, but will it happen?
Tom has already said only if the story's right. Tom is at the point in his career where he can pick and choose. He's not doing stuff for money anymore. He wants to tell good stories.
He wants a legacy.
And as he's been doing for years now.
Yeah.
Before we get into our 2023 preview, we're going to look back a little bit at our year at Rebel Radio. And I have a few moments that stood out to me that I want to talk about. I'm sure you have a couple too. Probably the biggest one is we reached 300 episodes. And we did – that was back in June. We did Return of the Jedi. And I felt like it was – we got to talk a great Star Wars movie, and it felt like it solidified like a legacy for this show. And maybe there's people out there that will never, ever hear our show, or there's people that will remember the Rebel Radio show, but 300 just feels like, wow, you did 300 episodes. It felt like we established our legacy as a podcast by hitting that many episodes. And I felt that was important. I also enjoyed the Raid 2. That's one of my favorite episodes. It was my birthday pick because I really liked that movie a lot. I thought that was fun. I hated the fucking comedy month. I'm not going to lie. That shit, just not my thing. You know, I mean, I didn't mind watching like Major League and the movies and stuff. It's just like, I find it really hard to discuss comedies in depth on the show because there's, you know, that's just me. They're okay.
Yeah.
That was a couple of the highlights. I really enjoyed our Compalooza Batman Returns talk. Because I always enjoy those live shows with you guys, and I imagine we'll do something again next year at Compalooza. So that was some of my moments for the year. Anything stood out to you?
Yeah, I mean, we finally got to do Three Amigos. I thought that was a fucking accomplishment because, you know, if you were to put money on that and say that, you know, that would you'd probably have like a, you know, 1-9 odds or something like that, that would happen. So, you know, I should have put money on that. It would have paid dividends, but it was fun, doing Three Amigos and, talking it. I know, you know, it may have not been, the best movie that we did that month. But I think it was one of our more of our fun episode, that we did. And I know Long probably enjoyed it too. And then, you know, it's easy to pick the anniversary movies, but I was going to say, you know, when we did Return of the Jedi and we had Frank on, and Frank was basically kissing our asses the whole time. That was great. Right. Getting fluffed by old Frank over there. And then, I also picked my birthday pick too, because anytime you get to talk Fast Cars, you know, and kind of a gearhead type of movie a little bit, but not too much. And talk about, you know, how, you know, the great Steve McQueen and his 1968 Bullet Mustang, you know, inspired other filmmakers and, you know, really kind of set the bar for, police scenes and all of that. That was fun.
Yeah.
We didn't get to, you know, record at Misfit Toys. That's something I would have really liked to do this year, but you know, there's always next year, like the Texans always say, there's always next year. And maybe we'll be over there, man.
And I also like sometimes the obscure films that challenge us a little bit, like Fist of Fury or Field of Dreams. It's a sports movie, but with supernatural elements, a little bit different than stuff we'll normally cover. Sometimes those are fun because we have to try a little harder on them, you know?
You don't know a whole lot about them. You know, that takes a little bit more investment of your time to make sure that, you fully understand that movie, so that we can bring it to our audience and, you know, convey with, you know, the entirety of that movie.
Yeah, that for sure. But here's to another, good year coming up, man. We're going to reach 350 episodes we've got lots of great movies we haven't covered. And so we're going to be covering some good stuff, man, over the next, we'll have a theme month in April, which we were talking pre-show what it might be. So we're going to have some fun stuff coming up, but let's look into 2023 and some things we're looking forward to. I did kind of a list of five movies, but also, I also have some honorable mentions that didn't make my top five list. And I'm going to name some of those real quick. I did movies, but But as far as TV shows, there's only two that I'm highly looking forward to, and that's The Mandalorian Season 3 and Ahsoka. Yeah, I'm really excited to see both of those on Disney Plus, and can't wait for those. Those are probably my two most anticipated TV shows of the year.
Is Last of Us coming out next year?
Oh, and The Last of Us in January.
Okay.
Yeah. Those three, man, I really can't wait for to watch. And so those are my TV excitements. And a quick note, I forgot to mention a movie that we covered. And I just Mike Hodges, director of the Flash Gordon film, passed away this week. So, you know, he wasn't a super known director, but he had a few good films. And to this point, he's given us the only good Flash Gordon movie until Hollywood decides to remake one, which I think will happen eventually.
Yeah.
I put these two movies on honorable mention because before all this happened with James Gunn, these might have been high on my list, but that's the Aquaman sequel and The Flash.
Yeah.
Really looking forward to The Flash movie. But now it's like, is it even going to be important to what's going to happen in the DCU? I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing Michael Keaton as Batman, but I put him on honorable mention instead of my top five just because I feel like they're not as important now, you know, but I still want to see him. And my other honorable mention before I get my top five is Creed 3. I will openly admit I'm not quite as excited because Rocky's not in it, but I also understand that Adonis has to go on his own. And I'm really curious to see what Michael B. Jordan does as a director. So looking forward to Creed 3.
Yeah, and in an original story too, you know, trying to build off of Adonis's Creed's background.
Yeah. So I'll start my number five movie in 2023. I'm looking forward to, and I can already hear the groans of people that hate the Michael Bay films. But I'm sorry, I'm looking forward to Transformers: Rise of the Beast. As soon as I saw Optimus Primal in the trailer, I'm like, fuck yes, I want to see that. And as the kid in me that grew up watching Transformers, give me Optimus Primal, baby. I'm ready. Let's go see it.
Hell yeah, dude. I have Ant-Man Quantumania as my number five for next year. And I just feel like I'm not expecting it's probably going to be the best of the Ant-Man films, obviously. But I don't think it's going to be. Yeah, it's not saying much, and I don't think it's going to be like a top five or top 10 Marvel film, but maybe it'll be in the top 20. I'm hoping that it's going to be in the top 20 because of how it'll potentially move the series forward, and that's something I haven't seen a whole lot of in you know almost a whole year.
Yeah, fair enough. At number four, man, I have John Wick 4. And I did not do that on purpose. Number four, John Wick 4. But yeah, love this franchise so far. The trailer's great. I mean, what else is there to be said about Keanu Reeves in this role? It's been an exciting run so far. We're going to cover a little preview of 2023. We will cover John Wick 2 the week that John Wick 4 comes out, since we already did the first one. So we'll have some John Wick coming up for you in March. I even have toyed with the idea of doing back-to-back weeks of John Wick, doing two and three. So we'll see as we get closer to March and covering those and finishing up the initial trilogy so far before the fourth one comes out. But definitely looking to see what kind of action John Wick brings us in part four.
Yeah. For me, I'm actually going to go with a what's probably going to be a guilty pleasure movie, and I'm going to go with Cocaine Bear at number four. It looks like loads of fun and batshit crazy. And my oldest son explained to me what really happened to the bear that got into the cocaine. So it got into some cocaine fell out of a plane or something and it got into it and it ran for like 15 minutes straight at like full speed and then just died. But of course, we've got to have a Hollywood take on this, and it looks just hilarious and awesome.
Oh Lord. At number three, I have Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part One. Man, I love this franchise, and it just has gotten better with age. And after the success of Top Gun Maverick, I fully suspect that Christopher McQuarrie directing Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible will be another huge success, and can't wait to see it, man. The sequences from the trailer look awesome. Apparently the IMAX preview that showed up in theaters in front of Avatar, people said it's just incredible. I'm actually surprised. I've heard there's a new trailer coming. I'm surprised it didn't hit yet, but
yeah,
definitely looking forward to Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning.
I've got John Wick number three. Obviously, we've been getting teased the hell out of, and looks like there's going to be some double crossing here from the last trailer. And man, the fight scenes look like they're going to be epic. You know, as they always are. He looks like he's got his Mustang back too, so that's going to be another plus.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
At number two, I have Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Because, man, I love the first one so much. I mean, as much as I love the live-action Spider-Man films, Into the Spider-Verse is my favorite Spider-Man movie. It still is. I will say that. I loved it, man. It's like a love letter to comics and Stan Lee and just everything it did. And I'm really looking forward to the sequel a lot. The trailer is great. And I expect them to pull off magic twice. I really think it's going to be a really good movie. So definitely can't wait to see Across the Spider-Verse when it comes out in June.
I'm going to go, I don't know if this one's in your top five. I doubt it. But I saw the original Dungeons and Dragons as a kid and I thought it was fun. Obviously now I know it's not that great. But this one looks so much better than that. And I really am excited to see Dungeons and Dragons just cause I like those. I do like those swords and sorcery type of movies. And this one looks like it could be good. Obviously it's piggybacking off of recent, popularity from Stranger Things, but, I think it's going to look, I think it looks
good. I hope, I don't know. I didn't, the trailer didn't do enough for me. We'll see. My number one is an easy pick and that's Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Can't wait for June 30th. I'm so excited to see this. I'm love that Indy is back because I'm one of the people that didn't hate Crystal Skull. I was fine with it. Yeah, maybe I wouldn't have put Shia LaBeouf in it, but otherwise I was fine with the movie. You know, didn't bother me. And this one directed by James Mangold, who's just a great director, man. He really is. Harrison, who, you know, Harrison doesn't talk about his movies a lot, as we all know, and he's been talking it up. He's been really, you know, he's been out promoting 1923 and he's been talking indie. And if Harrison's excited, that makes me really excited because Harrison doesn't talk much. So that says a lot if he's saying really good things about it. So I can't wait for June to see Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
I'm with you. Indiana Jones looks like it's going to be the best film of next year. Just the de-aging looks great.
Oh, man, those still shots they released are amazing.
Yeah. There's only one scene where I'm like, you know, where he's on the horse. I'm like, that could be better. But
Mangold has actually addressed that. He says, hey, the movie's not done yet. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, it ain't finished, you know? So it's, you know, it's not going to be as good a quality. But you know what? I mean, just, it looks like it's got all the elements of an Indiana Jones film that we'd want to see. The adventure comedy, you know, scene that we got with the whip and the guns. So I'm excited, man.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun to watch.
It's so cool to see Solitude back in it. I mean, John Rhys Davis. So that's cool. So, yeah, I'm super excited, man. I for that movie, I can't wait, man. 2023 looks like I was doing my list and, looking at all the stuff that's coming out and, you know, cinema obviously has taken a hit with the COVID times the last couple of years. But it really feels like 23 is going to be the year it comes back. I mean, you look at March alone is Creed, Dungeons and Dragons, John Wick, and Shazam. You know, they're all coming out in March. So it feels like this is going to be the year, you know, that cinema really makes its big comeback. And I hope so, because I do enjoy going to the movies. It's still an experience I enjoy and I like a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And so before we get out of here, let's preview our first movie of 2023. And we'll, again, we're taking New Year's weekend off, so we'll be back in a couple weeks with a new episode. And but to kick off the new year, we're going to do one of the greatest animated films of all time. A movie that I absolutely adore and my children like. And, and just an amazing movie from Miyazaki, and that is Spirited Away.
Walt Disney Studios presents a Studio Ghibli film.
Honey, don't take a shortcut. You always get us lost.
From master filmmaker Hayao Miyazaki.
What is it?
Come on, let's go in. I want to see what's on the other side.
Where are you going? Hey! You said just a quick look. Now let's go back.
You shouldn't be here. Get out of here now.
What?
Leave before it gets dark. You've got to get across the river. Go! I'll distract them.
Mommy!
Don't be afraid. I'm Master Haku.
No!
I just want to help you.
No!
In worlds seen and unseen, where spirits are transformed. And sorcerers rule.
The witch Ibaba controls you by stealing your name. If you completely forget it, you'll never find your way home.
Your name belongs to me now.
One girl's future depends on her judgment.
Aren't you getting wet out there? I'll leave the door open for you.
Her courage.
It's Haku! He's hurt! Haku! Haku! This way!
Her loyalty.
Haku helped me before. Now I want to help him. Everyone, I need my shoes and clothes, please.
And remembering one thing above all else.
I want you to know my real name. It's Chihiro.
Walt Disney Studios presents a Studio Ghibli film. Experience a magical movie phenomenon embraced by all the world.
Let's go!
This fall, prepare to be spirited away.
This is a movie that if you don't, I've said this before on the show, if this is a movie that you don't enjoy, I question your love of cinema, because it's just a special, gorgeous, wonderful story, wonderfully animated. It's something in it to love for all ages. And it's just a remarkable film, won a lot of awards. It's celebrated 20 years later as one of the greatest animated films of all time. And, been wanting to do this on the show for a long time, and it's amazing we haven't done it yet. And when I was making the list to start the year, I'm like, fuck that. We're doing Spirited Away. Let's kick off the year with a great, great film. It's on HBO Max on their Studio Ghibli section. You can watch, if you've never seen Spirited Away, take the 2 hours to watch this movie. You'll enjoy your life better for it by watching.
It is nice to watch. I've seen this movie twice. I haven't seen it recent, so it's going to be nice watching it again. I remember when I first saw it, it was while we were out on our spring break thing for band. We go on and we perform, over in like Corpus Christi as a competition. But we'd also have some downtime, and someone was like, "Oh, have you seen Spirited Away yet? I have the DVD." And I'm like, "Well, what's Spirited Away?" I'd never really watched a whole lot of anime movies at that time, like Miyazaki films,
right?
And that was my first one, so it's really cool. It's gonna be fun to talk about it again.
I actually saw it in theaters with Frank, our former co-host, and Frank drugged me to it because I was like, "What? I've never heard of that." My anime at that point had been Ghost in the Shell and Akira, and Robotech, things like that. So Frank drugged me to see it, and I walked out of the theater being blown away. And I think shortly after that is when I tracked down Princess Mononoke and My Neighbor Totoro. I became a Studio Ghibli fan. And so looking forward to Spirited Away when we come back for the new year in 2023. But until then, man, the RebelRadioPodcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs. Continue to be safe. Have a wonderful holiday season. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year from Matt and I.
Merry Christmas.
From the Rebel Radio Podcast. And thanks as always for listening and making a great year for us. And we look forward to bringing you more good movies and good talk in 2023. But until next time, this is Mark.
This has been Matt.
Remember, as always, just go there and do it.